Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Well, at this point, we know just the one cow in California has been infected with mad cow disease, otherwise known as bovine spongiform encephalopathy, BSE. Well, that one cow has already prompted two major South Korean retailers to immediately suspend sales of U.S. beef. It's not the first, it's the first case, by the way, of mad cow disease in 6 years, and the USDA maintains that it was found in a cow not intended for human consumption. But the South Koreans are not the only ones worried about the safety of American food. Joining us now to answer how founded those fears are and how the government handles food scares is Scott Hurd, Associate Professor of the College of Veterinary Medicine at Iowa State University, and also, for the purposes of this conversation, former Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety at the United States Department of Agriculture. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Todd.
So, trade implications of this news. Look, South Korea immediately reacts to the case of one cow in California with mad cow disease. They say, we're not going to buy U.S. beef at two major importers in South Korea. This smacks to me of sort of trade strategy, not health strategy. Maybe, you know, we've had beef disputes and free trade disputes with South Korea for years. Are they taking advantage of this news to get a trade advantage?
Well, first thing we should note is, as you said, these are actually South Korean retailers. This isn't actually the South Korean government.
Okay.
They have not taken any action, and to my knowledge, as of last night, no foreign countries had taken any specific actions. The South Koreans do have a high level of sensitivity about beef and trade issues. When I was in Washington, actually, in 2008, they had riots and the whole shebang about U.S. beef. So they're very sensitive to it for certain political reasons that I don't quite understand there.
Well, to be fair, you say you don't quite understand, but on this side, maybe not at the USDA, but I remember in covering the FDA, trace amounts of certain antibiotics or chemicals, for instance, in shrimp, I believe, from Vietnam, and under pressure from politicians from the South, where we farm a lot of shrimp in the Gulf Coast, bans on imported shrimp. And right away you say, well, when politics comes into it, you're a little bit more sensitive about health issues than you might otherwise be. I mean, this goes both ways across the oceans, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly is a challenge. You can go both ways. I think the shrimp incident was a bit different in that it was what was in the shrimp was known to be harmful to humans. having this case of atypical BSE in a cow that was not even entering into the food chain is much different in terms of actual risk, and that's what we have to come back to, is looking at what's the risk and probability of real human harm.
And in this case of one cow in California, we heard a cut a little bit earlier from an advocate at the Centers for Science and the Public Interest, which is an organization not known to be terribly sympathetic to what it sees as lax regulations at the USDA or anywhere else, who said this isn't really any cause for alarm. It's not good, but it's certainly not horrible right now. How do regulators, you used to be a regulator, how do you assess that risk? Let's talk about scientifically first, and then we'll talk about in terms of public perception. Mad cow disease is transmissible through cows. You see one cow with it, automatically you get highly vigilant about the rest of the herd. So how do they have scientific confidence right now?
Well, the reason we have confidence is because every cow that enters the food chain every day has what's called the specified risk materials removed from that animal. So even if there were an unidentified case coming into the packing plant, those tissues that we know carry the infectious prion, tissues like the spinal cord, vertebrae, those tissues are removed, and they don't, and they're destroyed. They don't go into dog food. They don't go anywhere. So that's the reason we have the most confidence. And I'm sure the folks out in inspections today, and as soon as this case broke, are redoubling their efforts to make sure all of those specified risk materials are removed.
Oh, we're speaking with Scott Hurd, associate professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Iowa State University, also former deputy undersecretary for food safety at the USDA. Professor, we spoke yesterday with Sarah Klein. She's a food safety attorney, as I mentioned, from the Center for Science at the Public Interest. Listen to what she had to say, though, about how regulators regulators can continue to track potentially infected animals?
One of the major loopholes, weaknesses, failures of the American beef industry right now is the lack of a national animal identification program. And what that means for you and I is that if there was a larger outbreak, whether BSE or E. coli or anything else, the beef industry would have real trouble tracing back to every potential implicated animal.
Now, this is not a major outbreak right now of BSE, but she's sort of sounding the alarm that if it were to become one, with mad cow disease, tracing back to the source is critical. She says the industry can't do it.
Well, I don't disagree with her that we really would benefit from a better tracing system, particularly in the beef industry. The pork industry has a good one already in place. But I disagree in one sense in that we really can, as you found in this situation, quickly found our way back to this farm. And I think in a short time, they'll know the entire life history of that animal. So it can be done, but there may be situations where not for every animal can it be done. But of course, when we talk about an outbreak of mad cow, this is not like it would be an outbreak of flu in the school where 90% of the people get ill. It's a very slowly progressing disease. It's not a large percentage of animals that are going to be positive should we have an outbreak. So it's going to be easier to trace them back. We trace back all of the three previous animals that occurred in the U.S.
Scott Hurd, in the minute we have left, you've been on the inside in the government of outbreaks like this before. Public perception is critical, public perception of safety. Aren't people at the USDA, regulators and staffers running around this morning formulating an effective PR strategy to try to tamp down any public panic and make sure that people are still willing to drink milk, still willing to buy beef?
Yeah, I think they are, and I think you saw those releases already. And essentially what they're doing is trying to assure people of the facts that this is being watched, the risk is minimal, and there's certainly no reason for alarm.
And a lot of regulators are hoping that that remains to be the case. We all do hope that that remains to be the case so often. Well, not so often. What can happen after the initial announcement that everything's fine is that sometimes things aren't fine. We certainly hope that doesn't happen in this case. Scott Hurd, associate professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Iowa State University, also former deputy undersecretary for food safety at the USDA. Professor, thanks for coming on and helping us understand what goes on behind the scenes during a potential outbreak. We appreciate it.
All right. Good to talk to you, Todd.